Where Nobody Knows Your Name is not filmed at all. Purely audio. Welcome to Where Nobody Knows Your Name, a Cheers podcast. This week, I'm Barry.
And I'm James.
And he's James. And today we're looking at Season 10, Episode 4, The Norm Who Came In From the Cold.
No.
Is that the wrong title?
The Norm Who Came to Dinner.
Oh, see, I had two titles on the streaming app.
The Norm Who Came In From the Cold also works, but it's not as relevant.
Okay. Isn't that strange?
That's a reference to a John le Carré, The Spy Who Came In From the Cold, which they also parodied the title way back in an early episode. The Norm Who Came to Dinner, however, is based on the 1939 play The Man Who Came to Dinner. In the play, a blowhard critic breaks his hip at a dinner party and must stay with the host until he heals, during which time his presence wreaks havoc on the host family. It was adapted for the screen in 1942, starring Monty Woolley, Anne Sheridan, and Betty Davis. I've seen the play version of this.
Any good?
Yeah, it feel very akin to like an Ealing comedy, but it is good.
Well, after that disastrous start then of misnamed episodes, how does this one start, James?
Well, it starts with some basic admin. It aired on the 10th of October, 1991. It was directed by Tom Moore and written by Dan O'Shannon and Tom Anderson. Would you like another little fact about this episode, or more precisely, the week in which it aired?
I would love a little fact, James.
Two nights after this episode aired, Kirstie Alley hosted Saturday Night Live, and there were guest appearances by Woody Harrelson, Kelsey Grammer, George Wendt, and Ted Danson during the monologue.
I actually listened to this the other week, I think probably as a result of your Kirstie Alley episode.
Yes.
It was really heartwarming. It seems to be an endless parade of surprise and joy, especially for the audience. I imagine that those on stage knew, but it really was lovely.
It is a fun cold open, and it's nice to see the gang coming together. Did they steal Kirstie Alley's moment a bit? Who's to say? All I know is that she seemed to have a fun time regardless.
Well, this episode doesn't start with Kirstie Alley. It does start with Frasier, who is
a fetching outfit.
Yeah, he's looks like he's planning to get on a sweat. He's got his joggers on, and he's decided to change his ways.
Because he's been coming to this bar for 7 years.
Yes, he has a little bit of a paunch these days.
It's a good word.
Yeah. And particularly noticeable in a moment shortly into this episode where Lilith is standing next to him. And Lilith has always been very sort of slight. She's a slender lady. And there's a noticeable bulge in Frasier's gut standing next to her.
happens to the best of us, Barry.
Oh, absolutely. I've embraced it.
Yeah, you hit 26 and it comes at you like a brick wall. That and we don't think it will when we're you know early 20s. Like no, it won't happen to me. I've got the metabolism of a moth or some other winged insect, and then it hits you.
Yeah, well, I will totally agree, but I'll scale up all your numbers by about 0.6.
As in you didn't notice it until early 30s. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, genuinely. I think because I actually became more interested in fitness. I did a lot more sports in my late 20s, early 30s. So I was quite chunky when I left university, just purely through drinking and sloth.
Yeah.
Mainly.
The two sins. Whereas as Barry, he hasn't been trying to, but Barry has seen the devolution of my physique over the past few years.
I haven't been making note. James, I think you look splendid.
Oh, stop it. You're making me blush. Anyway, yes. And he's trying to get Norman Cliff to engage in some jogging and a fitness regime.
Yeah, they're unwilling because they've tried that before.
They have. Yep. Frasier questions this. He goes, what are you saying, that someone came here and tried to get you on a fitness regime? How did that turn out?
And here we have a lovely backstory reveal. It kind of explains Paul, doesn't it?
Yeah, it gives Paul's origin story.
Now, is Paul credited?
Yes, not in opening credits, but at the end, yeah.
Because there's often a couple of characters who are uncredited, aren't there?
there are, and we may as well go onto them now.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's mostly barflies. We don't have any guest spots. But we've got Paul Wilson as Paul Crapence, Philip Perlman as Phil, Peter Schreiner as Pete, and then we've got unaccredited bar patrons, Joyce Agu, Lee Allen, Joey Banks, Joan Carey, Joyce Goldman, Katie Graves, and Dal AMI, uncredited as bar patrons. But yeah, the origin story of Paul is that he was the personal trainer. Now, see what's happened to him.
Yeah, quite the fall from grace, if that's the case.
It's not exactly a health spa, you're running here, Sam. Mm-hmm.
So that's our cold open. And the episode begins within the bar. The staff of the bar, along with the usual regulars, are ordering a dip and fry takeaway. And they're in a bit of a rush. Well, it's insinuated they're in a bit of a rush by Norm, who says, if we don't hurry, they'll change the grease.
Is old grease good grease?
Old
that's a sentence I didn't think I'd say.
Old grease has presumably absorbed the flavour of everything that's come its way.
We had KFC rum the other week, John and Troy and I. You can watch us drink it in the first of our trilogy of terror, Shots in the Dark. We'll say, it's nice.
Well, I'm sad to have missed it. To our listeners, they may think that there's a social divide here of three friends and one guy who turns up to the occasional episode.
You were quite ill at the time.
I had COVID, confirmed COVID, and I was so annoyed because I had four social events, including a work event as well, all packed into 4 days, and I was just a wreck.
I mean, you can watch the footage and you might be better out that you weren't there. We're not saying, but we were better off without you. I'm just saying Troy and I felt it.
Yeah, but given that I have some experience in visual effects, I could probably just shoehorn myself in somewhere in the background.
A static photo of you.
Yeah. Be like the hidden boy in...
Three Men and a Baby, yeah, where there's a cardboard cutout of Ted Danson in the background. I like to think that you'll just position yourself in front of a green screen doing shots so you can superimpose yourself in, and your partner will be like, Barry, what are you doing?
Yeah, the VFX editing will slowly go downhill.
Just filled with a green hue.
There is that character in the Young Ones. Young Ones is a very chaotic anarchist sitcom from the 80s. And there's a character in that that no one saw until they'd been able to watch it on VHS and pause it. There just was a long-haired girl who would sit in the background.
Didn't say anything, but it was almost like the creature from The Ring.
Yeah. So maybe that could be me, just hidden away in the back of shots.
Wingdings is what Cliff probably orders, and he does. But Norm goes for what he thinks is a healthier option.
Yeah, he has a baked potato with trimmings.
With sour cream, butter, various cheese.
But he does hold the...
bacon bits.
Bacon bits, yeah, to be healthy.
I do love a baked potato.
I wouldn't go for bacon bits, but I do love those onion, you know, little fried oniony bits.
Just batter.
Yeah, essentially. Yeah, lovely.
Beans, cheese, lovely. A couple walks in with a baby, don't they?
They do, and Rebecca feels her instincts tighten. She's instantly broody.
Yeah, because her and Sam wish to have a child, so conversely, to out of sight, out of mind, in of sight, in of mind, yeah?
Yeah, but Carla has different thoughts about this. She thinks that Rebecca will be a terrible mother. And consequently bets her that she can't look after a egg.
Yes.
Till close of the bar on Friday. And it's a $5 bet.
And, you know, it's the classic sitcom or comedy trope, isn't it? Using an egg to represent a child. You know, and we did this back in school. And the trick was, you know, you can hard boil the egg. But, of course, you can't hard boil a child. It's not doesn't quite translate.
No, that's no one of child rearing. Do not hard boil.
Do not take the egg as a literal as a literal representation of a child.
Yeah, and also as funny as it is to slap the egg out of your friend's hand, again the same isn't as amusing when it's a baby.
Yeah, so. Be wary, it is a metaphor.
That feels very much to me like a public service advert that might appear on TV.
Some may think that an egg isn't sufficient to test one's parenting skills, but I think that one egg is enough.
Oh, hey.
There you go. Pun out the way. Back in the episode. It was worth it. So yeah, Rebecca takes the egg to her office to keep it safe.
Yes.
Yeah.
We shall come back to the egg.
The cranes come in and ask Norm if he could paint their living room today. Norm doesn't have much going on.
He quotes them $400. They shirk at that quote. So he offers $200 plus food and beer. And they immediately switch back to the $400.
$400 it is. He's a man with a big appetite.
We cut straight to Norm painting a wall. And Fraser, obviously bored. He's not working. Maybe it's too early for the pub, although we've just seen him come from the pub, so perhaps not. And he's pestering Norm.
Say, can I help you with anything? I mean, maybe stir the paint, maybe?
No, they shook it up over at the paint store.
Yeah, right, those machines that shake the paint, yeah.
Yeah.
Say, you know, that's, I wonder who invented that. That's a guy that really made a worthwhile contribution, you know? If he was a guy, I mean, he could have been a woman, I guess. But isn't that interesting? Oh, why would I assume just right off that it would be a man?
Fraser, I'm starting to miss Cliff.
I think it's worth pointing out that the reason they need a redoing isn't just because the fancy redecoration, but because Freddy was playing fireman with ketchup and mustard and somehow knocked a wall out.
They said that he put out a wall. I think that Fraser was insinuating that in his mind that was the fire. And so we covered it in mustard and ketchup.
That makes more sense. Either way, relevant because he's a fireman now.
What, Freddy?
Freddy Crane is a fireman now in 2023.
Oh, yeah. There you go. There's a callback.
Yeah. See? It all makes sense.
Oh, that's a proper...
deep cut.
So Fraser takes his pestering to another level by almost insinuating that Norm doesn't know what he's doing, but in a friendly manner, by repeating tips from a TV show they've been watching.
This Old House.
This Old House.
Do you want to know some things about This Old House?
If they are worth knowing, I want to know.
I'll leave that up to you and our listeners. This Old House, 1979, is an American home improvement show that originally aired on the PBS network and was still on air as of 2020. That guy from This Old House that Fraser is referring to is master carpenter and longtime host Norm Abram. Norm Peterson's ignorance of the show is odd, considering that they've watched it in the bar at some point. But maybe it's just Norm trying to make a point.
Norm may have been drunk.
That's the summary of most Cheers episodes.
And let me go wildly out on a limb. Is this Old House in any way an inspiration for Home Improvement?
The Tim Allen show.
Mm.
I'd say there's a similarities. Yeah.
No, I wonder where Tim Allen got his catchphrase from.
Fraser's arrogance, would you say, gets to a new high when Norm says he can't reach the top corner because he's shorter than Fraser and Sam. So he needs to go and get his big ladder, which is fair. You know, you don't stand on the top rung of the ladder. No, no.
No.
It's just general safety.
Yeah. But Fraser is pays no mind to safety.
He throws safety to the wind.
and himself to the wind, actually, on top of Norm.
He climbs up and stands on top of the ladder and falls onto Norm.
Very much straight out of WWF, this move.
John Cena! Da, 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 da. Yeah.
Climbed on top of the ropes and jumped off the corner.
And as such, Norm is injured. I thought he'd have sprained his ankle by the way he was falling. But no, it's his back, threw his back out.
Yeah, poor Norm. Although it doesn't seem to have a noticeable effect on his habits over the next couple of days, as we shall see.
No. He wants to go home, wants to go to hospital, but Fraser feels guilty. As he should, to be honest.
Yeah, he jumped on a man's back.
So yeah, Norm is going to have to lie on the crane sofa for a couple of days. And originally he's, you know, reluctant, but he accepts his fate.
Yeah, once the first beer appears in his hand, he's quite happy.
Back at Cheers, Cliff is being quizzed on the Dewey Decimal System.
He is.
And acing it.
800. Literature. 808.83.
Short monologues.
Boy, Mr. Clavin, you sure know your Dewey Decimal System.
Normally, Cliff isn't tested. Cliff throws out these seemingly...
nonsensical.
Yeah, but you could imagine they're true. In this case, he proves that he knows something, which isn't necessarily the Cliff I know.
And also, it's a good organizational system, the Dewey Decimal System, but memorizing it, I don't see the point in. Often, in a library, you go to a generic section to find something.
Well, you could argue the same for many things. My friend is a librarian. He's a bit further up the rung nowadays, but he could recall most Dewey numbers and what they refer to, at least maybe not to the specific that...
The two decimal point place.
Yeah, but certainly he was very good. He could tell you almost every chunk of the library and what it referred to.
I suppose the larger the library, the more relevant and necessary it is. Like the New York Public Library, probably very necessary because of the level of specificity you'd need to go to.
Mm. I remember studying at school, and it was quite ingenious system from what I remember, but now seems relatively straightforward. It's one of those things that is celebrated because no one did it before.
Go on, Dewey.
Yeah.
Cheers to Dewey.
Cheers to Dewey.
Good lad.
So, yes, Norm rings the bar to let them know that he's laid up on the Fraser or the Crane sofa. And that's it. That's it in the bar. It's a little interlude. But we cut back to Lilith beginning to question Norm and his demands, which Norm actually flips on its head with a lovely clip with a really sort of backhanded compliment.
Lilith, you and I are very different people. I mean, look at you. You're successful, ambitious. You've got a great career, lovely family. Me, I'm just a guy who sits on a bar stool and hangs out all day with his dorky friends. I don't know. I guess I've always sort of felt sorry for you.
He's got an easy life, does Norm?
He does, yeah. But he's got it just the way he wants it, I think.
The door rings, and Norm thinks it is pizza that he ordered on Lilith's MasterCard. He's starting to take the Mickey. That's the safe for work version.
Yeah, he's definitely settling in. It's not the pizza. It's Cliff.
It's Cliffy. He's here. Basically, he seemed to be getting bored of doing his job.
Yeah, he's ditched a shift, hasn't he? Dropped in halfway through a round.
Yeah.
Which, you know, Cliff, is he losing his dedication to the service?
I think so. He used to take it very seriously.
Well, he immediately asks for a beer from Lilith. And before she has much time to complain about saying that this isn't a tavern, we don't have beer.
But do you see beer? Do you see a bartender? And of course, what enters but a bartender with beer?
Yeah. Sam arrives with two kegs of beer and makes himself at home as well.
Yeah. Lilith is highly displeased. Mm-mm. At what point would you as a host be... annoyed. I think asking for beer, I'd be like, yeah, sure, Norm, I'll get you beer. Don't worry about that, mate. I think when he ordered pizza on my card, that's when I get annoyed.
Mm, oh, yeah, that's theft.
Yeah. But asking for a beer, sure, I'll have one too. Why not? You know?
Mm. Yeah. I think the minute that Sam is at the door, you know what's happening. But so before Lily can complain again, the door goes again.
Paul and Phil arriving with takeout.
And before Lilith can complain again, there's another arrival. This one is someone who actually lives there, though, so it's not so unsurprising. But Fraser arrives from the kitchen with wingdings.
She tries to say that the cranes need peace and quiet, and then Fraser comes in with hot wingdings, which, if that is not special, I don't know what is.
Yeah. So Fraser is completely on board with this gathering. Lilith takes him into the kitchen and makes sure those wingdings are given back to him.
On it, all over his shirt. I don't know what sauce is on it, but I'm looking at that shirt going, I bet that tastes delicious.
Yeah, a slice of that shirt as an aperitif.
Mm.
Almost like a reverse napkin.
Yes.
Where you'd want the flavour to go onto you.
Lovely stuff.
That's the end of that scene. We cut to nighttime. Lilith and Fraser are now in bed. Lilith quite clearly awake and disturbed by the distant sound of partying. Fraser's asleep.
It's 1 a.m. I almost went a bit Big Brother there, but I shan't.
It did sound like you were starting a story.
It's 1 a.m. in the Korean household. Lilith wakes Fraser up because the party's still going on. Cliff still hasn't finished his round, and Fraser goes, you know, he still feels responsibility for Norm, so he feels like he can't, you know, halt the party there. She gives him the ultimatum of never seeing her naked again in the 90s if he doesn't make them leave. It's 1991, so...
Oh, yeah, she's... that's a decent threat, I'd say.
I think it's a decent threat. He does, however, caveat saying it would work better if you didn't use that threat every time you wanted something.
Yeah, that's a good line. Shows how where Fraser's priorities lie, or where his weakness is, I should say.
Weakness, yeah, yeah. It's his Achilles heel, but to quote Rimmer for Red Dwarf, it's just slightly higher up.
That's a very good line.
He does go down, but doesn't ask them to leave. Obviously, Lilith is most upset.
Yeah, well, by the time she gets down there, which seems like moments later, he's already at the piano.
She tries to argue that Norm is the only person who has any right to be there. But he's scarpered, Barry.
He's not even there.
He's gone to Cheers.
It sounded like he went, and when we see him, he went to Cheers to get a break.
He has, yep.
The irony.
She says that by the time she gets back, because she's going to scold Norm, that Fraser is a dead man. It's almost closing time when we cut back to Cheers. Rebecca is still cradling that egg.
And she's proudly telling Carla that she's nearly made it. Now, I was expecting an egg breaking at this point. I thought that Rebecca might go near the door and Lilith would storm in and slap the egg out of her hand or something like that.
You think final hurdle, Carla would go, can I have the egg? And Carla would break it and go, lesson one. Don't give your child to strangers.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Or she might hard boil it or something equivalent. But no, the egg, actually, Rebecca has been successful, but Carla has played her.
The egg survived for 3 days. Carla has played her because she made several other bets that she can make Rebecca carry an egg around for 3 days.
Yeah, very, very canny by Carla. She's very street smart. She knows what she's doing.
She says, rightfully so, and what I alluded to earlier, you think carrying an egg around for 3 days proves you could be a good parent? No, no, no. Carrying a watermelon between your legs and clucking like a chicken, that's what proves you're a good parent.
But she doesn't fall for that one.
No, no. So Woody loses some money there.
So that little side story is now over. Rebecca has been truly played, and we cut back to Lilith chastising Norm for being rude.
I came by to tell you that your behavior has been unconscionably rude. You let your friends overrun my home, and then when you leave, you don't even have the decency to take them with you. That's all I have to say. Good night.
Wait, Lilith, wait a minute now. Look, you're absolutely right, and I'm sorry. You're up already, you know, why don't you just relax and have a drink? Well, come on, you took care of me for 2 days. The least I can do is buy you a drink.
It's a good start, I think, from Norm.
Yeah. Yeah, he's definitely taking advantage. Like you say, the using their credit card was a stretch.
Yep, you owe her at least 4 drinks, I think, Norm.
Mm, yeah.
Because that's the cost of a pizza, which she had no interest in eating.
But this does get Lilith to open up a little bit. She knows that she is uptight and that she struggles to make friends. And Norm advises her to just let go a little bit.
Yeah, just relax. And she gives one single exhalation. She exhales once.
Sighs?
That's the word. That's the word, sigh. Yep. Thank you, Barry. But exhalation scores much better on Scrabble, so.
Yes, you give one little exhalation and she's come to the realization that he's right. And she feels free and excited. And she decides that she's going to go back to that party and organize the hell out of it.
If you can't beat him, join him.
Yeah.
Organized fun.
That's what she wants to do. And she goes off to print out
an itinerary, isn't he?
Yeah.
Plan. Schedule.
A sigh.
Yeah.
She's going to go and print out. So she even wants to make a game of going to find a late night copy service.
I don't mind the activity she's got in mind. I think at 1 a.m. you don't really want to be... Actually, 1 a.m. Pictionary does sound all right.
Well, yeah, I must admit, a party game, if your company is good, strictly speaking, you should be able to do any activity. But it's what frustrates me about clubs and bars is that they're so noisy that you're not actually making use of that social engagement. You're just standing near people that you know.
Well, hey.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's why I've stopped going out on New Year's Eve, unless it was a party for someone I knew and like they hired a specific function room. It's just a too noisy place, which takes me too long to get my drinks. I can drink at home for cheaper.
Yeah, I think that is becoming the trend these days. I was always complaining about clubs from the age of 18. I didn't like the idea of, because it's not where I felt my strengths lie. I think if you're a very attractive individual who's...
If, to quote Cat Stevens, you know a lot of fancy dancers.
Yeah. Whereas I wanted to talk to people and I wasn't a wild drunk either. I just drank because I liked feeling merry and then I kind of stopped. So I wanted to be around people, chat to people, and inevitably, because I don't think there was much other solution really, everyone would just end up in a club because that's the only place you could go.
Don't mind events where there's loud music and dancing, but more of like the wedding vibe where you know at least half the people there, you'd imagine. And it's usually music which people know, I'm going to sound well old, which people know the words to. And as such, there's a camaraderie there, you know.
Well, there's definitely truth in that. Definitely. Yeah. It's that old thing of knowing your audience. My dad has a friend who's an old school DJ, a record player, parties, and, you know, he could choose the mix. And my dad would sometimes DJ alongside him. And there's this running joke of my dad's friend would fill the bar by playing hit after hit. And then my dad would play some obscure B-side that he thinks is fantastic, but no one's ever heard of, to educate the audience. And of course, would just clear the dance floor. When you've got a generic group of people and you try and play a niche music to them, you're always going to lose them. And those sing-along classics, people may say they don't like them, but they know them and they know them well enough to join in with everyone else. And it just creates a good time. I was at a festival where at the end of the weekend, they have this big event with fireworks and everything else. And for the preceding sort of hour or 2 hours, everyone sort of mills towards this field and gathers. And in all the preceding years, they had played all those classic party songs, your ABBAs, your Hi-Ho Silver Linings, that sort of thing. And this year they decided to play generic dance music. And the whole crowd stood there kind of bored, kind of shivering a bit.
It's something I've noticed because Barry and I both live in a city whose main commerce is from students. It's a university town. I have found that the venues that one goes to which play music, it's rare to find songs from, say, our childhood. And Barry and I differ slightly in age, but even so, the music which you'd seen a lot of venues now are from only, 15 years ago because of the influx of students, which is why when we do find a bar in this city, which is like, oh, 70s, 80s, now this might be a bit before either of our time. But as you said, we know them, you know, the clientele of said venues enjoy being there without feeling the pressure or wariness to keep up with whatever the modern trend is. Some good modern music, I'm not going to be a naysayer. But classics are classics for a reason.
Yeah, and there's a difference between the modern music. It comes down to that. We talked about streaming services the other day. Every type of music now has its own individual niche rather than one chart for all things. And everyone used to watch the chart religiously every week, whereas now I wouldn't know where to find a chart show, particularly one that encompassed all music. And with YouTube and Spotify, people choose what they listen to. And so there isn't this universally known and hopefully liked set of music.
It's increasingly difficult to be the next Beatles now. Regardless of one's opinion of Beatles as a band in terms of their preference, they were culturally huge at the time because partly, not to discredit their quality, partly because there was less music to listen to, you know? There was less choice. There was less oversaturation.
Yeah.
But anyway, Barry and I will be back next week with Sounds of the 70s. But until then, how does this episode of Cheers end?
So it ends with Lilith running out the pub excitedly because she basically thinks she's a changed woman, not realizing that her plans for the party might not go down so well with those already at her house. But, you know, it's nice for her to finish on a high.
It is. And Norm calls Fraser and goes, get out while you can.
Yeah, probably good advice. Did I just hear the doorbell?
Yeah, he's been taking a long time.
He has.
And he smells like beer and shame. But he's here with our mail. It's the master of the Dewey Decimal System, Cliff Clavin. Yeah, there's a lot of numbers, yeah. You don't need to tell me them.
Thanks, Cliff. Bye, Cliff.
But as usual, before we open our letters, we have to give a shout out to our Norms on Patreon. So this goes out to Treb Curry. If you want that special Norm treatment, then check out our Patreon page for that and so much more.
I will start with a pretty obscure one. At the start of the episode, when they reveal Paul to be their previous fitness instructor, he's reading a newspaper. What newspaper is he reading?
Oh, see, I thought about putting this in my notes, but I didn't. He's trying to catch up on something. It's got a T in it, a T sound.
There is a T, but expected for where they are.
What?
Well, it's Boston.
Oh, I see. Boston Globe, Boston Times.
It is the Boston Globe, but it's the Boston Sunday Globe. And he's looking at the funnies, I imagine.
That's what it was. Yeah. Good question. What does Norm order from Dippin' Fry?
Well, this was one of mine, but we did cover it in the episode. Baked potato with sour cream, butter, cheddar cheese, and jack cheese. Hold the bacon bits.
Yep. Do you like me some jack cheese?
What is jack cheese?
Monterey Jack.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
I'll tell you what, if I were to ever be a traveling salesman, I think I'd choose the name Monterey Jack.
Yeah, that's nice.
It's a good name.
What is the name of the doctor that treats Norm off screen for his back injury?
Oh, I think I have this written down somewhere. Feld.
Yes, Feld or Felt. I wasn't sure which. My subtitles did say Feld.
Feld as in the latter part of Seinfeld.
Yeah. Ah.
Dewey Decimal System. What is the number for short monologues?
Now, this one I did get. 808.83.
Yes, it is. Do you want to know a sheer coincidence?
I would love to know a sheer coincidence.
That the time code I have for when that quote is given is 8 minutes 38. I saw a connection between them.
I would too. I imagine that you and me have a similarly mathematic mind and background. We do see these things.
So when I put that one, huh, that's all.
You suddenly became Nicolas Cage in Knowing.
Yeah, I haven't watched Knowing in years.
Yeah, a man who discovers that the planet is ending through a few numbers he found in a child's notebook.
As you do.
Yeah, as you do. How much did Carla earn overall from her betting scam?
$165 was her profit.
That's right. Very good. Shall we explain?
Made a series of $20 bets, which she got money in, but had to give some money back to Rebecca.
Yeah, it's a bit more than that. So she made, from her $5 bet with Rebecca, she made $150 from the patrons of the bar.
Yes.
Obviously lost the $5 to Rebecca, but made $20 from Woody, a follow-on bet.
Simple, really.
Yeah. What three games does Lilith want to play at the party?
Pictionary, Botticelli, Charades Till Dawn.
Yes, I will give you 3.5 points.
Because of the specificity.
Yes.
We got another message here. This one is from Norm. He's trying to set up his own bar in the crane house there. And much like we have our own little bar and hosted through this podcast, you know, you too can set up your own podcast. And we recommend nothing more than Zencastr. It's been a very useful tool the past few years for us. And it's proven not just very good at producing a podcast, you can also host a podcast on there. It's generally just a good video conferencing tool as well. It allows us to sound our best when presenting about our favorite topic, cheers. It's very user-friendly, and it encompasses everything that we want to do for our journey. So if you want to use Zencastr, and we do recommend it, then go to zencastr.com/pricing and use the code NORM, and you get 30% off your first month of any Zencastr paid plan. I want you to have the same easy experiences we have had and the same easy experience Norm has had. He's had an easy day this week. So for all your podcasting and content needs, it's time to get on Zencastr to share what you have to say. That's last call. What are we ordering?
Ooh, this is a good question. Eggnog?
Very festive.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Again, eating a baby goes against the rules as well.
Well, we can have hot wingdings.
Definitely.
That sounds good. Maybe advocar? That's an egg-based drink, is it not?
Yeah, that's egg-based. And we could also chug a keg each.
Oh, now you're talking. Yes.
I think that sounds like the start of a home party, don't you?
A keg per person.
Yeah, let's turn up at John's unannounced and see how annoyed his partner gets.
Let's do that. And we won't tell him of this until this episode airs.
I don't think she'd be too annoyed. I don't think she shares the qualities of Lilith.
No. She, as long as we got her a drink, I think she'd be fine.
Yeah.
Let you know how this goes next week, everyone. Bye. We'll be right back.